Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on Member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the BC. It is Saturday, the 11th day of June, Anno Domini 2022. And you, you lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 8 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Here comes the news.
Maybe. The EAS is going off. Oh, it's somebody's phone. Amber Alert.
It's my phone. I've got some sort of alert going on. I apologize.
Well, the Amber Alerts bypass your Do Not Disturb settings.
Yeah, they do. Okay.
So, why didn't mine go off?
Yeah, mine. I don't know why yours didn't go off. Anyway, here's...
It hasn't yet. It will in a minute.
Yeah, here's the news. Malware that steals your passwords, credit cards, and crypto wallets is being promoted through search results for a pirated copy of the CCleaner Pro Windows Optimization Program. This new malware distribution campaign is dubbed Fake Crack and was discovered by analysts at Avast, who report detecting an average of 10,000 infection attempts every day from its customer telemetry data. The malware distributed in this campaign is a powerful information stealer that can harvest personal data and cryptocurrency assets and route internet traffic through data snatching proxies. The lure seen by Avast is a cracked version of CCleaner Professional, a popular Windows system cleaner and performance optimizer, one which we ourselves like very much, that is still considered a must-have utility by many users. The poisoned search results take the victim through several websites that ultimately display a landing page offering a zip file download. This landing page is commonly hosted on a legitimate file hosting platform like filesend.jp or mediafire.com. The zip is password protected using a weak PIN like 1234, which is merely there to protect the payload from antivirus detection. The file inside the archive is usually named setup.exe or cracksetup.exe, but Avast has seen 8 different executables used in this campaign. The malware victims are tricked into installing software that steals information stored in web browsers, like account passwords, saved credit cards, and cryptocurrency wallet credentials. Additionally, it monitors the clipboard for copied wallet addresses and replaces them with those under the malware operator's control to divert payments. This clipboard hijacking feature works with various cryptocurrency addresses. The malware also uses proxies to steal cryptocurrency market account credentials using a man-in-the-middle attack that's very hard for the victim to either detect or realize. The campaign is already widespread. Infection rates are high. So avoid, like we have to tell you this,
yeah, really.
Avoid downloading cracked software from anywhere, even if the download sites rank high on Google search or Bing or, you know, whoever. Look, if you're getting professional-grade software that you're supposed to pay for free, you deserve what you get, quite frankly. Mm. But you should be at least a little suspicious. Anyway, our poll of the week at soundbites.org. That's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Fake CCleaner Installs Malware. And your choices are, I know I'm clean. I think I'm clean. I hope I'm clean. See what now? Meh. And, of course, other. So far, we have 21 votes. I know I'm clean and see what now are tied for first, followed very closely by me. And I know you'll have more to say about this. So if you go to our website, that's soundbites.org. That's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff. You'll see the forum. Second forum down is the poll discussion. Currently, at least the number one item under poll discussion is 11/22. Fake CCleaner installs malware. And, of course, you can give us an actual phone call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
Yeah, a lot of malware tends to trade on the good name of legitimate products to give it some legitimacy to trick you into installing it. But there have been a couple of cases where legitimate software has been infected on the legitimate download page.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that's
they've been hacked.
That's a little
tricky too. That you can have sympathy for someone for, but when someone clearly is stealing software and gets caught.
There's a free version of CCleaner. You can get right from the company.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, the problem is people just Google it and click the first thing that comes up without seeing the ad badge next to it, and it's a fake ad for fake software.
Right. So you want to be a little careful, even on, you know, Google and Bing and DuckDuckGo and all of those are quite diligent about getting rid of stuff like that, but...
There's
a timing issue, right? Exactly. It gets put up. Somebody notices it. Somebody checks it. Somebody gets rid of it.
Yep.
In that 5-minute period, it hits 100 million people. So, you know, there's no magic here. The magic is inside your head. Pay attention to what you're looking at, and think carefully.
This is not the first time this has happened. I found an article from Kaspersky that it happened in September of 2017.
Yep.
The more popular your program is, the more likely it is to get cloned and hacked and malwared. We need a verb for creating malware.
Speaking of the spyware net, what great feature they just came out with, they updated Revo Uninstaller. And the new feature that they added, and that's why I always encourage folks, you know, if you find these products, you know, useful, pay for them.
Yeah,
they automate it, so you know, like super anti spyware or malware bites. Sure, easy for me to say. we'll do it automatically for you. Another great one that we recommend is Revo Uninstaller. They added the feature now. If you see a bunch of stuff that you want to uninstall, you can click them all, and then say uninstall, and it does a group uninstall.
Yeah,
I love that feature.
Nice feature.
You can download the free version, but the paid version, I think it cost me $29.
Yeah.
It was a Christmas special.
$2 a month.
For 2 years.
$1 a month.
Buck a month, basically.
Yeah.
Although, on the other side, we had a customer come in this week because they got a weird message on their screen from a bat. The icon looked like a bat.
Okay.
It was the M for Malware Bytes.
Okay.
Offering to sell him the upgraded premium service.
Right.
So sometimes your program has a free version and a pay version. You're going to get ads for the pay version.
Yep.
That's one of the benefits.
That's how they make their
benefits
money.
Benefits of using the free version.
Right. Yeah. Right. And that's fair.
But at least he called and didn't just click install.
Right.
If it was a fake message, then yeah.
But like you said, going back to, it was a free program they download, and then to try to hack, you know, grab other stuff that you know is illegal to have anyways, and then...
Well, that's just it. It's the professional version costs money.
Yeah.
And if you've stolen it and you get caught by something, oh well.
And if it mucks up your machine, oh well, it's like Russian roulette.
Right.
You were rolling the barrel there to see if it was going to be an empty chamber, and it wasn't.
And it wasn't. We had, for years, we had a problem at one of the places I worked. I won't mention RIT by name.
Okay.
One of the places I worked that had...
Those are initials.
Yeah, right. That had... people were downloading a game called Elf Bowling.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
Oh, yeah.
And it was a cute little game.
Yeah.
It was elves bowling, and, you know, it was fun. But it was also extremely virulent malware.
1999.
Yes. And, you know, we'd clean people's machines. We'd explain to them that Elf Bowling was a bad program and they shouldn't run it again. And then they'd go right back and download it.
Mm-hmm.
I avoided that when I started at the College of Business because nobody had rights to do that anymore. I made sure they didn't. But, you know, that's, you get that. People want their games.
Yep.
It's a free game. Why shouldn't I have it?
Well,
because it... The only reason it's free is because it's got malware in it.
They made a movie of it in 2007.
Did they?
There was a legitimate version, and then one that got filled with malware.
Yeah, I had the same issue, too. I had a customer come in, and she kept complaining. She brought the machine in 3 times because it kept getting infected with malicious malware. I says, well, you got to stop going to these sites.
Yeah.
The third time, she goes, Well, it's got to be my son. I go, what? Well, I let him play with it. I said, wait a minute, this is your business computer?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then when I'm not using it, I let him on it. I said, well, he's the problem here.
Yeah.
He's going to these sites, putting this stuff on there. Well, I don't know what to do. I said, get him his own computer.
Or keep paying you.
Yeah. Yeah, or keep paying me. I said, get him his own computer. So if he messes it up, oh, well, he's got to pay to get it fixed.
Or create a standard user account. Which
right.
is
it can't
much,
install software.
Right, much like. In fact, everyone should be running in a standard user, not the admin.
Yeah, not
user.
Admin.
Right.
So have a separate admin user you install programs with, but run as a standard user. Then malware can't install itself automatically. You know, things can't install without you knowing it. They can't make changes. Can't change your search page, the search
right.
hijackers,
yep.
things like that. When you're a standard user, because you don't have administrator privileges.
Right.
And then if something pops up and asks for administrator privileges, don't
no.
type your password. Yeah.
Right. Say
yeah.
no.
Yeah. I remember reading a story about a company that sent out a test phishing email to their employees.
Yep.
And it was fill out this survey and you could win a prize. And when you click on the survey, it brought up a page saying don't click on links in your email. You got to go through training and this could have been malicious. It could have destroyed the company. And this one employee kept calling tech support and wanted to know where her prize was. I've opened that email 5 or 6 times already, and I can't find my survey to get the prize.
Dumb is as dumb does.
Yeah.
All right, to the phones. Our first caller is Sherman from Greece, New York. What's up?
Well, I've got a MacBook Pro that's about 6 or 7 years old, and I understand that New York State just passed a law that says that we don't have to take it back to the original manufacturer to get repaired. I don't want to do it myself. I'd just as soon take it to an independent. Any suggestions?
Well, yes, we have one good suggestion
sitting right here in the studio.
And that's not quite what the law says. The law says that manufacturers have to provide diagnostics and repair information to independent repair shops. Apple was already doing that. They have the independent repair program. They've had that for a year or two so that independent shops can use Apple parts and Apple tools. What Apple did just do is release the individual repair program. So now you can replace, say, the battery in your iPhone yourself, and you can rent the proper tools. It's 80 pounds that comes in 2 Pelican boxes. For $50 for a week to rent the tools. And these are all tools that we had to buy, of course, legitimate service provider. And then you get instructions on how to do it and register the serial number of the new part. One of the blogs did a test on replacing a screen, and they saved, I think it was $5 by doing it themselves versus taking it to the Apple shop. So if you already have the tools, great. Most people don't have these microscopic, almost literally microscopic tools to open these tiny screwdrivers. But there are independent repair shops in town. I happen to work for one of them called Mac Ave in Victor at mac-av.com. We are an Apple authorized sales and service provider, so we use all Apple tools. We use Apple parts. Apple warranties are maintained. That's the other big thing when you do it yourself. If you break something, the warranty's not going to cover it anymore because you broke it.
Or if you short something out.
You short something out.
Because you're in a hurry and try to do something.
Apple used to do this years ago where a lot of PC companies, you have a problem with a thing, they'll send you that part to replace yourself. If it's a hard drive, maybe not so bad.
Right.
But a video card, a logic board, things like that. People have brought computers.
A screen.
People have brought computers into us while that program is running where they didn't unhook the connector, they just ripped it. So then they ripped the socket off the logic board and they ripped the connector off of the cable, and now you just caused $2,000 worth of damage.
Mm-hmm. Right, because buy a new machine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So for people that know what they're doing, there are ways to do it yourself. But if you don't know what you're doing, you're not handy with a soldering iron, you don't know about tinkering with inside tiny things, it's really not something you want to try yourself.
The other key thing that I always said was the key thing for anybody that's going to go in to work on a machine has to have patience.
A lot of it.
Do not rush anything. Because the minute you rush, that's when you're going to make a mistake and short something out or ruin something and cause far more damage than you originally went to go in there and fix.
But in your case, Sherman, since you're asking about a place to take it, let me suggest an Apple certified dealer and repair shop like Mac Ave, mm-hmm. where A, you know you're getting real Apple parts, B, your warranty in whatever form it still exists is maintained, and C, you've got people who have been certified by Apple to make that repair.
And if they break it, they got to fix it.
You're right. They break, they fix.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I'm an old auto mechanic, and I don't have the patience, and I don't have the little fingers and the little tools. So,
cars used to be easy to work on yourself.
Exactly.
And now they're computers with wheels.
Yeah, today you need a master's degree in electronics.
That's exactly right.
I thank you very much, gentlemen.
Sure.
It's always a pleasure to listen to you every Saturday, and I'll be in contact with Mac Ave.
Thank you so much, Sherman.
One of the arguments that is still going around on the internet is that how long are manufacturers obligated to provide service parts and manuals? Apple is 8 years is what they currently have, and by whatever law that used to be. But for something like cars, you can still find manuals and parts for 30, 40, 100-year-old cars.
Yeah.
You got to get your Model T fixed. But the other thing that some people don't like is that Apple does board repairs. So if there's a problem with your iPhone, it's the battery, the screen, or the logic board.
Right.
three main parts. So they replace the logic board, which can be expensive comparatively. To replacing components, but it's easier to replace a logic board. There are companies that will go in with literally a microscope and looking at circuit traces and find the burnt circuit, unsolder the broken piece, and resolder a good piece back on.
Yeah, really.
And then so they don't need to replace the logic board, and then lose all your photos because those are on chips soldered to the logic board.
Right.
But they just spend hours and hours with a microscope going through your boards.
So labor costs more than the replacement.
Right, labor, mm-hmm. right. So the part's $5, but it's 5 hours of labor. Where the other way around, the part's $100, but it's only an hour of labor.
Right. And by the way, that just brings up the fact that if you're not backing up your phone, that's a bad thing. Back up. Many phones nowadays have automated backup systems. Yep. If you have, for example, an Android phone, you can auto back up to Google Drive, or rather Google Photos. If you are on any phone and have Amazon Prime, you can back up to Amazon Photos. You can back up to Apple
iCloud Photos.
iCloud Photos.
What's interesting with Apple, iCloud Photos isn't really a backup, it's a sync.
There's a separate
backup program. And the one thing that's happened, it's pretty big in the Apple world and now happening in the Google world, Apple gives you 5 gigabytes of free disk space. Google gives you 15 gigabytes of free disk space that you also share with your email and your documents. Same with Apple. So when that 5 gigs is full, and 5 gigs is nothing these days.
Right.
We really wish Apple would up that, at least into the 15 or 20 like the other companies. You'll start getting messages that your iCloud storage is full. It's 99 cents a month for 50 gigs.
Yeah.
That's not bad.
It's not bad at all.
And then you don't have to worry about losing your photos when your phone dies.
That's the one thing that I know you and I had to deal with constantly with folks. They come in and say, oh, my machine died. Now, where's your backups? And they've lost all those family photos.
Or they show you a drive that's still sealed in the box. I meant to get to it.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. You meant to get to it.
I meant to help you get your stuff back, too.
Now you send it off for commercial recovery. We had a customer, poor guy, he bought a RAID, didn't understand what the RAID versions meant. So he thought, oh, let's do it fast. So he did a RAID 0. One of the drives failed, everything is lost.
Yep.
Because that's the way RAID works.
Mm-hmm. That's the way RAID 0 works.
So you should have done 5, and then you could have speed and redundancy.
Right.
But then I don't get all 5 capacity drives. He had 5 2-terabyte drives in there.
Right.
You'd only get 8 terabytes of capacity, not 10.
Right, because one of them is that backup.
Yeah, it's the redundancy. In case something goes wrong, you don't lose any of your data.
Right.
Or you have that 10-terabyte drive, then you have another 10-terabyte drive to back up onto.
Right. Google is very similar, 100 gig for $2 a month, or I think it's $20 a year, I think, if you pay annually.
One thing that's a little annoying is they don't have, yeah, so Google has 100 gig, 200 gig, and 2 terabytes. Same with Apple. So 200 gigs is $2.99 a month.
Right.
2 terabytes is $9.99 a month.
Right.
I have 250 gigs of photos. Why isn't there a 1 terabyte version for, say, $6.99 a month?
Right. But if you have Amazon Prime.
Yeah.
Yep.
You can put all those photos.
All the photos, but it doesn't do the videos
right.
that are part right. of your photo library, because right. a lot of people shoot videos on their phone, too.
Yeah. Right.
That's where I wound up setting up the Amazon Prime.
Yeah.
To back up my wife's photos. So now we got it in 3 spots. And it was great because I was able to sit there and say, okay, yeah, just grab this folder. And every morning at 5 o'clock in the morning, it checks to see if she's added, which she has that following day, because I got her in the habit of syncing it into the 2 folders. That following morning, that third one goes on up to the cloud.
Yep, and that's the way it should be. You should be backing stuff up regularly and often. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Don't forget, give us a call, 585-966-5299, 1-800-790-0415. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. You are listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That would be Soundbites, right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we're member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Jim from Irondequoit, New York on the line. What's up, Jim?
I have the snipping tool on one of my laptops, and I got a new laptop, and I'm trying to download the same snipping tool. But when I do it, it comes up with a different icon than the little scissors that's on the other one. And it says Kloof under. Is this the authentic snipping tool? When I do it,
are you on Windows 11?
No, 10.
Yeah, I thought snipping tool was built in.
Yes,
yeah,
snipping
tool
is built in.
Really?
Accessories, isn't it? I believe.
I tried to find it. I couldn't. I'll look again.
Tell you what, you can do a search.
It's under Windows accessories.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or go to start and type snipping tool.
Yeah, snipping tool. Just
That's why I thought that was the case, but I couldn't find it. I'll keep on looking.
All right, once you're in the menu and you find it under accessories, you can right-click on it and say send shortcut to desktop. And then that way it's always there for you to access.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Bye. Yeah, this is another one of those cases where you need to be careful of things you downloaded from the internet. When you've got a built-in utility like snipping tool, and then you download a snipping tool, it may not be legitimate. So be very careful of things like that.
It used to be print screen. Remember 40 years ago you hit print screen and your screen printed?
Yes. Unbelievable, isn't it?
And then they changed it to take a snapshot of the screen and put it on a clipboard.
Right.
So many people thought the print screen function went away.
Right.
Even though the keyboards have been labeled print screen for 40 years.
Right.
It's on the clipboard. You open something and paste, and there, oh my God.
Yeah, right, exactly.
And on the Mac, it's Command Shift 3.
Did you hear about the latest scam going on out in Nevada? They just busted this group of folks that were stealing gas. And what they did is they did up these trucks, and they had extra tanks in them. And they have a laptop up in front, and they programmed the laptop to connect into the pumps.
Oh, wow.
And fake out how much gas they were literally taking.
Right.
And getting over thousands of dollars worth of gas, or thousands of gallons of gas, because they pull up, and it looked like, say, a panel van, but they had been converted. So once they started pumping, they could hit the electronics through their computer and fake it out. So they go in and pay maybe, you know, the $50. But they're trying to warn folks that, you know, somebody comes there and pumps gas and they're there an hour pumping gas. Yeah, that might be a little suspicious. But they said, believe it or not, it was a shorter one, that the person was there over 7-8 minutes and the attendant got a little suspicious. And when his boss came in, they did an audit and that's how they got exposed. But they had this whole fleet going around Nevada. And then they'd go to California and sell it, the gas, for a higher price.
Right.
Yeah, it didn't take long for the oil companies to raise the prices to wipe out the discount from the New York State dropping taxes, did it?
Exactly. And, of course, we all have to worry about skimmers, which are these little attached devices that essentially cover the slot where you put your credit card in. And when you slide it in, it, of course, is actually read by the real credit card reader, but it is also read by the skimmer, which stores your information, stores the number, and it stores the PIN number that you put in.
And that's another thing about gas stations. So if a gas station doesn't ask for a PIN number or a zip code or anything like that, don't go to that gas station anymore.
You're right.
Because that means there's no security.
Right.
On the card. So just the card number someone can steal. It's annoying to have to type in your zip code, but you want that to happen.
Yeah.
Because that means there's extra security that that station is doing to help protect your card. So to bypass that, what the bad guys do is on the skimmer, they'll put a little tiny camera and watch you type your PIN. So cover the PIN pad while you type it.
One of the things that I love about my phone, and pretty much everybody's phone has this, is I have Google Wallet, which I don't think they call it that anymore, and I don't care. But basically what Google Wallet lets me do is put in my credit cards and other cards like PayPal and things like that. And I can now, anywhere that I can tap to pay, I can pay with my phone rather than my actual credit card, which also means because I tend to pay a lot with PayPal, PayPal uses a one-time only number.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead and steal it.
Mm-hmm.
It's useless.
Yep.
Yeah, Apple Pay does the same thing.
Apple Pay does the same thing. My credit card does the same thing.
Yeah, some credit cards are adding that as a feature now, too. Yep. Every time you use it electronically, it is a one-time code. It never repeats, so no one can ever steal it because it never works a second time.
Right. So
And it's limited, too, isn't it? The amount of time that code is good for?
One time. Once it's done, it's done.
Yeah. Okay.
So, yeah, that's exactly right. So you type it in, you put it in, and it's a one-time code, and then that code is no good anymore.
Well, that's what I mean. You have so much time to type it in, and then...
That one purchase.
Right. Yeah. That one purchase, right. Yeah. Right.
In the early days, there was a problem because you had to put in an expiration date.
Right.
So that one-time card worked until the end of the month because it expired at the end of the month.
Right. But now it's
computers can do anything these days.
Right, it's completely automatic.
Yeah.
So I try to use my phone rather than my credit card as often as possible.
Yeah, Google Pay now.
Google Pay.
But it's weird because the wallet is where you store your cards. Why don't they still name it wallet?
Because it's Apple Pay.
Well, right. So Apple Pay is the service where you pay with, and Apple Wallet is what stores your card. So that makes sense.
Well, yeah. But I use Google Pay all the time. In fact, I use it in places where they say, you cannot use this.
When there's a little symbol there, the looks like a Wi-Fi symbol.
Right. And basically, anywhere you can tap to pay, you can use your phone.
Now,
once it's set up, obviously, and, blah, blah, blah.
And you add a credit card to it.
And you've got a phone that actually has a near-field communication chip.
Walmart has a service similar to that.
Right.
But it ties to your checking account directly. So when you make a payment, it comes directly out of your checking account. I don't really like that very much.
Right.
I'm a little concerned even about debit cards.
Right.
Because at least a credit card has a $50 maximum liability for fraud. Most banks will waive the fraud liability for debit card, but it's much harder because since debit comes right out of your checking account, it's a lot harder to get your money back off a fraudulent debit card transaction.
Right. So If you have not used one of the wallet pay things, you should look into it. It is much safer. In fact, I used it this morning when I paid for my breakfast. You just wave your phone. Yep. They hold the reader out the window.
Yeah.
This particular person was a little annoyed, but did it.
Well, because they have to grab there and pull it in.
Yeah,
may be hanging on the wall.
Right.
Or what I get a kick out of, you go to some place where they didn't know that worked. You see the logo and you tap your phone and it pays and the receipt comes out. And I go, wait, you got to give me money first.
Right. Yeah.
I just did.
I did that at a place and the guy said, what did you just do?
Yeah.
I told him and he said, wait, I have an Android phone. Wait, I have PayPal. I can do this?
Yep.
Yeah, yes, you can. I was all excited.
Modern technology.
Who doesn't love it? All right, back to the phones. Speaking of old technology, and we're going to talk to James from Rochester, New York. What's up, James?
Yes, I received an email this week from supposedly the Geek Squad.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't had anything to do with Best Buy or the Geek Squad for 5 years. And it said your account is about to be renewed.
Yep.
And there was a little attachment and there was a phone number. I called the phone number. I didn't open it up or anything. And the guy was pretending to be from the Geek Squad. I said, I haven't had anything to do with you people for 5 years. He says, well, that's wrong. It's ready to be renewed. We'll be charging.
Because it was a five-year plan you bought.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. And what he wanted me to do, he says, get in front of your computer right now. He didn't ask for any money or anything, but he said, you need to go sit in front of your computer. And I finally hung up on him. Obviously, it was a scam, and I forwarded it to Best Buy. I don't know if you've heard of that before.
It goes around every now and then, but it looks like it came back this week.
Yeah.
And the phone number they give you is an 808 area code, which looks like an 800 number you're used to, but 808 is actually Hawaii.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. Oh.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
But we don't have to worry about long distance anymore because most plans are nationwide these days.
Right.
But sometimes the scam is it's like Guam, which looks like because it's a U.S. protectorate. It looks like a U.S. area code, but it's an international long distance because it goes around the world.
Right.
And you can end up with a huge phone bill. Yeah.
Yeah. The guy was very convincing. And I finally called Best Buy.
Yep.
The Geek Squad, and they asked me to forward it to them, which I did, and that's good. The end of it.
Yeah.
Good. And that's a point for everybody. If you get something like that smells wrong,
mm-hmm.
call the company directly. You know, Best Buy has their phone number, their real phone number, everywhere, including on their website. So if you go to bestbuy.com, you can find the phone number.
Yeah, I got their phone number in 1 minute and called. And
right.
Yeah.
Said, no, we don't do that.
Yep.
And that.
Right.
But I don't know if you heard of the I know there's a million scams, but obviously the Geek Squad one is alive and well right now.
Yep. Yeah, thank you, James. We appreciate that.
And I'm looking at one of the example emails that's been posted, and there's a couple of grammatical errors on it that can be a giveaway. The other thing, too, is something... Something I've said for years, and maybe I should stop, but they're saying it's $500 and we're going to charge you for this plan. If it was $100, they'd probably catch more people.
Yeah.
Or 75 or 50. But all of these fake tech support scams always seem to be $300, $400, $500, $600. And then you have to stop and think, is that, you know, $500 is a lot of money to spend.
But see,
if they said it was $100, they'd probably catch more people.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they're going after the folks that, you know, that are naive to all these scams.
So they get 10 people at $600 instead of 1,000 at 10. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. If they're going to spend the time and effort, they're going to go big or stay home.
Yep.
Because they're trying to hit the elderly folks that really don't know much about computers and they're vulnerable. Your computer's been hacked or this or that. And that's why you hear these elderly folks going out and buying all these gift cards and all this other junk because they're falling prey to it.
Yeah, we had one poor woman that got caught for $20,000 in gift cards, $100 and $200 at a time.
Wow.
Your computer's only worth $1,000.
Right.
You buy a new one for under $1,000. Well,
more than that, there is no legitimate company on the planet who will ask you to pay for stuff with gift cards. Not one. Not a single one anywhere in the observable universe.
Right. At least in the Apple world, if Apple calls you and tells you to buy Apple gift cards, that has a little bit of legitimacy.
Maybe.
You could understand them saying that.
Maybe.
But they won't do it, yeah.
Yeah, but I'd still hang up and call the actual number that I know. Somebody calling me and saying that they're from Apple.
Spoof the call ID. So the call ID says Apple or says Microsoft.
But again, don't just Google Apple phone number.
Yeah.
Because I'll guarantee you the first 10 things that come up are not Apple scammers.
Google's been really good about getting the real company first on most of those. But Bing isn't being as good anymore.
No. So be very, very, very careful. The best thing to do is to go to the actual website. Everybody knows Apple.com, BestBuy.com. And get the legit phone number and make the call.
We've said for decades, if you get an email and have to think twice about it, delete it.
Well, especially now, Geek Squad's subscription fee is really only $200.
Right.
I'm on Best Buy's website now.
Right. But don't forget, look, if you were walking down the street, somebody came up to you and said, hey, man, there's a problem with your what-you-call-it, give me gift cards. You, at the very least, walk away.
Yeah.
But somehow, when you're sitting at home, talking on the phone,
the safety and security of your own home,
your brain switches off and you go, yep, let's go do that. You got to be more cynical, frankly. I hate to say it, but when something like that comes along, cynicism saves you money.
I saw these two guys that go after scammers, because they'll get the calls in it. Well, they hacked into one scammer's computer.
Yeah.
And, again, showed the camera and that. And then they went in there and wiped out his hard drive.
Yep. I've seen that. There are YouTube videos about
that. Yeah, and it is so cool. I've just gotten hooked on those. These idiots that call. And like you say, it's poor English. They don't know what they're talking about.
Right.
They're calling the U.S. and they're calling them constables.
Yeah.
Right. No. That's over in England.
Oh, you're only charge $500? I usually charge $600 when I scam people.
Right. So you're scamming them for only $500? Son, you need to come work for me. I'm scamming them for thousands.
Yep.
Yeah. You be aware. Be cynical. I hate to say it, but be cynical.
You have to. Yep.
Yes. Yes.
That is a...
Then for a while, there was one going around that was, I'm calling on behalf of your son, who's stuck in some country with no money.
Yeah.
Yep. Lost my passport.
Lost his passport.
Send me money for an airplane ticket.
Yeah.
It's usually Heathrow. I don't know. Do people just know that Heathrow's in London?
Apparently, they must.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Or the kidnapped grandson scam. Grandchild scam.
Yeah. Yeah, I got one of those once, and I said, when did I get a grandchild?
Yeah.
And they hung up.
Or you said, you say, thank God, I hate him.
Yeah. I got one that said, your child. So at least they didn't, it wasn't a boy or a girl. I said, my child is stuck in London with no money. And my daughter, who was sitting next to me on the couch, looked at me with this strange look, and I said,
That's before you were born, honey.
Yeah. I turned to her and I said, I said to the guy on the other end of the line, I said, wait, I'll let you talk to her.
Yeah. They're scary. They're threatening. They're really convincing people that this
trying
is
trying to
issue.
Intimidate.
Yeah. And send us gift cards or we'll do something bad to your grandson.
Right,
and in your panic, they're forcing the people into panic so they don't think of calling their child or grandchild to see if they're okay or not.
Right, and that's the easiest thing to do. Hang up, call your kid.
Oh.
That's simple. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Jerry from Henrietta, New York. What's up, Jerry?
Hey, I got a question. I have an older iPad, the Generation 1, and it's kind of been forgotten by Apple. I'm just wondering, is there a repository of apps that will still run on that or something that I can do to keep it alive and functioning? I mean, the hardware is good, but the software is out of date.
Not really. When you go into the App Store, every app will tell you what version it needs of the OS. I've never looked. We're looking right now to see if there's a repository of older, a listing of older apps. Some apps are nice enough so that if your OS is too old for the current version, it will download the older version that, that still works.
For a first-gen iPad, I think that's OS 5.1.
Yeah. So, and that's a really long time ago.
Yeah, I know. It's got a beard or something like that. And it's eligible for Social Security. But, yeah, I saw a note from Apple or a news article that says that Apple's going to start kicking out apps that haven't been updated in 2 years or something like that on their App Store. And that causes folks who, like me, who still have some vintage hardware a little bit of heart.
Well, it's still the apps will still work on your device. You just can't download them anymore.
Yeah, okay. And this is one that hasn't been used for a while. I'm trying to give it some new life again.
Yeah.
You know, like give it a new video player or a new audio player, something like that.
There have been ways to install Linux on it. iPadLinux.org. It's not a reality yet, but they're working on it.
Okay,
so because the iPad is an ARM processor, it has to be Linux for ARM.
Okay.
So it's theoretically possible, but I don't see anyone that's doing it yet.
Right. There's a bunch of articles I found on people trying to do it.
Yeah.
I don't see any on success yet. There are things you can do with it. You can turn it into a mirror or mount it in your car, that sort of affair. Make it a digital picture frame. Make it a security camera.
I have one as a clock next to my TV because when we turned in the cable box, we lost the clock next to the TV. So now I just have an iPad running the clock. It's all
right.
I think it's an iPad 2.
Right, there you go. You get a dash cam. I don't know where you'd mount it without being in your way.
And there wasn't much storage on the old iPad, so
no.
If you want to store files, that'd be tough.
But yeah, I mean, as a you know, those little devices, maybe, but that's pretty much it.
Yeah, but a pointer to what you found for the older iPads and giving them a second life. iPadLinux.com?
.org.
Yeah. .org. Okay. All right, super. Thank you very much, guys.
Yep.
Thanks.
I wonder if there's a way to, like, put Chrome OS Flex now.
Yeah, I don't think anybody's tried that
yet. There are some Chromebooks that are ARM based, right? So theoretically, it would work.
Yeah,
if you can figure it out.
That would be actually pretty cool.
Let me see. Does Neverware have an option for Chrome OS?
No, I don't. Can you load Chrome OS on iPad? That's Chrome OS. That's
part of the
Chrome.
Yeah, part of the problem is that it's. The iDevices are pretty locked down, and you can't get to the root very easily to be able to install something else.
Right.
Protects itself.
Yeah, all the installations come through the App Store.
Yeah, look, I get it. They want to keep their ecosystem
protect
pristine.
The integrity of the
right.
system.
And I do get that. But once it's old, you know, why?
An iPad 1 is 10 years old now?
Yeah.
One of the things that we have been doing in our store, iPad 1 was January of 2010, so 12 years old for an iPad 1. The Autistic Center is it El Segal? I forget.
Mm-hmm.
One of the hospitals has an Autistic Center.
Yeah, El Segal.
They take donations of iPads because they work really well with autistic kids. We also have a customer that works with a school in Costa Rica, and another one that works with a school in Africa, and they take a lot of old iPads, old computers, because the kids don't have anything there yet. So anything is better than nothing.
Yeah, even if it's slow, they don't know what's slower versus fast, because even though they might have good internet, you know, it still works. Like you say, something is better than nothing.
Yep.
Right. Yeah, it's Chrome OS Flex is basically a thing that's designed to essentially let you run the Chrome operating system on old laptops. But I haven't seen it for anything other than old laptops. And right now it's in early beta, so it only runs on certain models of certain laptops. I got it to run on an old Toshiba. But I discovered a weird thing. If I try to use the mouse before I've logged in, I have no mouse. If I wait until I've logged in, then I have a mouse.
We had a customer this week had a Wacom tablet.
Oh, yeah.
I always like Wacom. It's probably Wacom, but I like Wacom.
Yeah.
And the pen, because it uses the pen on the tablet instead of the mouse, will not work until you log in. It doesn't load the driver until after login.
Interesting.
Even though the driver is loaded at the system level, it doesn't activate until the user level.
Well, that's not quite what's happening with mine. If I try to use the mouse, it never works. If I have a mouse plugged in, it always works. The trackpad always works. If I don't have a mouse plugged in, I cannot touch the mouse pad, the trackpad, until after I've logged in. It's just plain weird. All right, that music tells us that we are done with the first hour of this show, but do not go away. There's a whole nother hour of the longest running computer show coming your way with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. It's 59 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe. That would be Soundbites right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you, because with your support, we continue to be member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you shortly.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District and official media partner of this year's CGI Rochester International Jazz Festival, Jazz 90.1.
On Facebook at Jazz 901 FM.
Welcome back to America's longest running computer show, Soundbites, on member supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 9 minutes after the hour, you are hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That would be Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
I just found that video clip of from a military lawyer, the things that Tom Cruise would have been arrested for in Top Gun. It's 25 minutes long.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Now, on the one hand, he is a lawyer, so he's long-winded by definition.
Yeah. No, that's their thing.
Yeah.
Maverick is in the legal danger zone. With apologies to Kenny Loggins.
Yeah. All right. Don't forget, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. While you're doing that, I will read the next item. Apple's M1 chips, their new silicon.
M2?
Well, the new one is M2, yeah. But the M1 is still pretty new.
2 years.
Compared to the 8088.
Yeah.
Okay.
True. Yeah.
Apple's M1 chips have an unpatchable hardware vulnerability.
You're not doing the other story. Sorry.
Yeah. That could allow hackers to break through its last line of security defenses, MIT researchers have discovered. The vulnerability lies in a hardware-level security mechanism used in Apple M1 chips called Pointer Authentication Codes, or PAC, PAC. This feature makes it much harder for an attacker to inject malicious code into a device's memory and provides a level of defense against buffer overflow exploits. Researchers from MIT's Computer Science and Artificial Intelligence Laboratory, however, have created a novel hardware attack which sidesteps the security feature. The attack shows that pointer authentication can be defeated without leaving a trace, and as it utilizes a hardware mechanism no software patch can fix it. The attack, appropriately called Pac-Man, works by guessing a pointer authentication code, the PAC, which is a cryptographic signature that confirms that an app hasn't been maliciously altered. Since there are only so many possible values for the PAC, the researchers found that it's possible, given the power of the M1 chip, to try them all to find the right one. In a proof of concept, the researchers demonstrated the attack even works against the kernel, which has massive implications in the future security of all ARM systems with pointer authentication enabled. The idea behind pointer authentication is that if all else fails, you can still rely on it to prevent attackers from gaining control of your system. This attack shows that pointer authentication as a last line of defense isn't as absolute as we once thought it was. Apple has implemented pointer authentication on all of its custom ARM-based silicon so far, and a number of other chip manufacturers, including Qualcomm and Samsung, have either announced or are expected to ship new processors supporting that hardware-level security feature. MIT said it has not yet tested the attack on Apple's unreleased M2 chip, which also supports pointer authentication. If not mitigated, the attack will affect the majority of mobile devices and likely even desktop devices in the coming years. Apple did not comment on the record. So are you still feeling secure about your new Macs? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. Look, the idea that there's a hardware security feature is great, because the theory is you can't do anything to a hardware security feature. The problem is, if that theory is wrong, you can't fix it. And that's a problem that Apple is now facing. Now, this is not yet a widespread attack, but that's not the point.
You try to have the OS fix it until they figure out how to get around the OS fix of the problem, like the Spectre and Meltdown mitigations that have happened in the Intel side. If the bad guy can work around the mitigation, they can still exploit the vulnerability.
Right. So this is very, very bad. It exists in every M1 product Apple has put out. And it cannot, in fact, be permanently fixed. As Steve said, you might be able to get around it with a patch, but if you can then get around the patch, you have that unfixable thing sitting in your silicon.
It's still part of the system.
Oh, it's in other ARM chips too. It's not just the
right,
M1.
Right.
Yeah,
but the main place that people
the M1 on the Mac, but all the A series on the iPhones.
Right, exactly.
So they could be vulnerable too. Although it's harder to get a malicious app through the App Store onto an iPhone.
Right,
not impossible, but harder.
And lots of people sideload.
Yeah.
So that's a problem.
Well, yep.
So you want to be very careful. We've talked about this all the time. Be careful where you get your stuff. Be careful that you're getting the legit piece of software from somebody. I know it's not easy. How do you tell? Well, you do a lot of research. And your alternate choice is to get all your stuff stolen.
Don't click on links. Go to the actual website by typing it in physically. Yeah, granted, somebody might have sent you the link. Yeah, don't follow that link. It could be hacked.
It may not have come from the person it says it's from.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So it's better to just say, okay, and type it in or do a Google search on that particular item that you're looking for.
Even when you're in the App Store, you need to be careful. Yep. I went to download an app the other day, and there were two side by side with almost identical icons, identical names. One was from the company, and the other was from somebody, I don't know who that was.
Yep. Lookalike apps are a huge problem. Every night I read Google a couple of months ago removed, 5,000 lookalike and malicious apps?
Apps.
I can't
talk
today.
Easy for you to say.
Yeah.
So be very careful.
What was the Flappy Bird? Flappy Bird was so popular that, within a week there were hundreds of Flappy Bird clones.
Yep.
As soon as one game gets popular and starts making money, people try to rush clones through.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Jim from Brighton, New York. What's up, Jim? Jim? Are you there, Jim?
Oh, we're waiting for the delay.
It's not a 40-minute delay.
He's taking a bathroom break.
He could be. Take that bio break and then come back. He's going to try. Dave's currently using a hammer on the board. I'm not sure that
soundbite's your name.
that's a good idea, but Rob might not approve. But you know what?
He's soundbite your name.
He's we'll get somebody on the phone momentarily. Oh, Jim! Jim is coming back. It looks like we're gonna give Jim another try. That's how nice we are on this show. Jim, are you there?
Yes. Hi.
Hi.
Sorry about that.
That's all right.
Hi. Okay. My question is about deletions. If you go to delete an item, sometimes afterwards it'll say you wanted to delete it everywhere. And my question is, just what do they mean by everywhere? Because I think that's kind of an overstatement.
Well, it depends on where you're deleting them from and how your system is set up. Let's say you're on your phone. If you delete an item from your phone, it may be backed up in one or more places out on the web. Or it, in fact, may be backed up to your desktop if you've got, for example, an iPhone and a Mac.
And it's syncing between the two. So you delete it from one place, it deletes it from your phone, your tablet, your computer, the cloud, everywhere.
Right.
Okay, so if you had it saved in two different positions on your computer, two different locations,
right?
It doesn't necessarily take it off the second location.
If you have syncing set up to sync those two locations automatically, then yes, it would. But if you just made a copy of a file and then put another copy of a file in some other folder, it wouldn't.
Right. So if it's asking you if you want to delete it everywhere, then you probably have syncing set up, and deleting one copy when you say yes would delete all the copies.
Okay. Thanks a lot, guys.
All right. Have fun.
And that's a critical difference between syncing and backup.
Right.
Backup, you delete the original, the backup copy stays because it didn't know whether you intended to delete the original or you accidentally deleted the original.
They're not really connected.
Right. So you can always get it back from the backup.
Right.
But when you sync, it synchronizes. Maybe people forget that that's short for synchronize.
Too
many syllables in synchronize. Yeah, you delete it in one place, it synchronizes it by deleting it in the other places too.
Right. So you want to be very careful how you've set that stuff up. That's why we say you want to have multiple backups. And backups, not syncs. Syncing is good. If there's a catastrophic failure of your machine, it's certainly not going to delete the backups. But if you make a mistake, you can propagate that mistake across multiple devices. So you want to be very careful whether you're backing up or syncing something. And many things like pCloud, which I recommend, has, you know, you can decide how you want to do that.
Right. And you can do both.
Right, you can do both.
Yeah.
So be aware that when you set these things up, they can be set and forget, but the set part may involve multiple steps. So you want to be pretty careful about that.
And the fact that it's asking probably does mean that he does have syncing turned on.
Yeah, probably does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's, like we said, not a bad thing necessarily.
No, but you've got to be careful of what you're doing.
Got to be aware of what you're doing. Exactly right.
Click happy.
Right, right. If we can drill one thing into your heads, read before you click.
Yep.
And understand what you read before you click.
Yeah, they don't.
So many times people, I didn't understand it, so I just clicked OK.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's why your hard drive is empty.
Or they do just the opposite. They download a package and they get click happy and just install all this other malware and other software that they sit there and all of a sudden say, wait a minute, how did I get this? Well, you clicked on it and told them to install it. And now they're asking you for a subscription.
That extra toolbar that showed up, or your search page has been hijacked.
Or you also agreed to download this other antivirus software.
It asked if you wanted to make your search page better. It didn't say better for you or better for them.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Yeah.
Well, I had a guy ask me about his computer one time, his Chromebook. I thought we couldn't get viruses. You can't. Well, look, I've got 15 task toolbars on my browser. Mm-hmm. Well, you installed those. You installed something that said, do you want to add this toolbar? And you said yes.
Yep.
That is honestly, that is the only, I never did that. It's the only way you can get
somebody using your computer did that.
Right. Somebody using your computer did that.
No, they didn't. No one else uses my computer.
Then it was you. I'm sorry, but there's no magic here.
Yeah.
This cannot be installed without someone hitting the yes somewhere.
And the technicality is that a virus is self-replicating.
Right.
So installing a toolbar is not a virus. It may be a malicious program, but it's not a virus.
That's why we're calling them all malware nowadays instead of differentiating between worms and viruses. And
technically correct, which is the best kind of correct.
Yeah.
And least useful kind of correct.
Yes. That's true.
Be aware of what you're clicking on. Be aware of what you're installing. Take responsibility, because it is your responsibility. It's nobody else's.
It's your computer.
That's right. It's your computer. You did the installation.
You don't have an IT department behind you protecting you.
Well, and that's the problem. Nowadays, everybody needs one, and nobody has one.
All the work-from-home stuff, you're suddenly your own IT department
at home.
That's
exactly right. Because you not only have a laptop, you've got a network, you've got a router, you've got a printer. You may have 15 devices.
Yeah.
And all of them are interacting and all of them are talking to each other. I keep getting polls from Google. I'm part of Google Rewards, and they send out little things every once in a while for you to fill in. Surveys. Surveys is the word. And I keep getting them for the Internet of Things, smart devices in your home. And I'm always saying, no, I do not have that. No, I do not. I will not. None of those things are secure.
There's some mitigation
factors. Put them on their own separate network.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, it's just like a number of, even from Amazon, they'll sit there and say, well, you purchased this, rate it. No, you're not paying me anything to do that. Why should I take up my time to?
Although, see, I argue with myself about that, too, because when I go to buy something, I look at the ratings.
I always do.
but I don't want to take the time to rate them.
But I bought my wife for Mother's Day. I can talk about this now. She's already got it. I bought my wife a pin, a cloisonné pin, that's a coffee pot pouring into a cup. It's very cute. I bought that for her. And they asked me to rate it. And then they asked me why I picked that rating.
Yeah.
It works. You pin it on your coat and it stays there. Thank you. I don't know what else I'm going to say about it.
Was it delivered on time? Well, that's not their problem. It's Amazon if it wasn't delivered on time.
Right.
We've run into that at our store. Apple will send out surveys on Apple Warranty Service. And we get scored on our survey results, just like every company does. And if someone makes a complaint about Apple on our survey,
we take the hit.
Yeah. The survey is about us. Do not complain that Apple took a month to ship the part. Which actually, for everyone who has problems with their Macs and probably any brand computer
any
now, parts are taking a long time to come in.
If they can
really
even get the
long time.
Chips.
Yeah. Yep.
That is
factories
amazing.
Have shut down in China again. We heard, and so. There was a surge where parts started coming in for a couple of weeks, and now we're back to six to eight week delay time.
I know a person who's complaining they shouldn't have them in China. It doesn't matter where they are. They're in Vietnam. They're in Indonesia.
It's worldwide.
Canada. Yeah. Everybody is shut down. We say China as shorthand, but it's manufacturing plants all over the globe. Mm-hmm.
And there are several plants being built in the U.S.
Yep.
And we'll see in 5 or 6 years when they come online if we're going to still have those shortages.
And there's still, whether folks want to believe it or not,
it's $10 billion in 10 years to build a fab plant.
Yep.
There's still a global pandemic going on. The people are still getting sick to this day. And, granted, they're not dying like they did back when COVID first came out.
Right.
But folks are getting sick, and then they're out of work for, a week to get over COVID, and then they got to wait so many days before they're not infectious and be able to get to work. So there's, say, 2 weeks that somebody that gets it is out now. And that just compile that, by millions, and that's why factories and everybody else is suffering.
Right. And don't go buy a new car right now.
That's one thing that...
It took 3 months for my wife's new car to come in. Her lease ended, and she had to get a new car.
Right.
And it took 3 months to come in.
Yeah, you go by most of the lots. As I'm driving around the city from one end to the other, the dealerships, the lots are so empty. It's unbelievable. They might have maybe a couple new cars.
Yeah. And it wasn't exactly the one she wanted, but it's the one they had available.
Well, and that's very true. My daughter had to get a car. She got T-boned, and so she had to get another car. And she went to the dealer, and the guy said, you are lucky. He said, we just got a car in that's kind of like what you want. Why don't you take a look at it? It wasn't even cleaned out. She said, I took a test drive, smelled like French fries. There was stuff rolling around on the floor. She said, I'll take it. And when he came back, he said, it's good that you put down a deposit. We had three people come in not 10 minutes after you left. And this, you know, normally they say, oh, we've got 100 people looking at this. Yeah, right. In this case, she already had the deposit down. He didn't have to sell her anything.
Yep.
He was just telling her what happened. But yeah, so, you know, this is a child who could honestly fall into a pile of horse manure and find a pony. So she got herself a car.
Was like that.
Yeah. So she got herself a car. So we're very pleased for her. That's a good thing. Plan ahead.
Mm-hmm.
And let us say right now, right this minute, as Dave says, hear me now, remember me later. Now is the time to ask your children if their laptops need fixing before they go back to school. Now is the time, because when you bring them to someone and they say it will take a month to get the parts, you can say not a problem, as opposed to when you bring it in September 1st,
and
you can't fix it in time.
Yeah.
So go to your children right now and say, if there is anything you want fixed on your computer, you have a window of a week and a half to get it fixed, to take it to a dealer, because otherwise you may not get it back in time for school.
Yeah.
Don't call up in August and say, where can I send my kid's computer? Nowhere now.
Yeah.
Send it to a time machine, because that's the only way you're going to get it fixed.
And if you're lucky and it's not a super critical problem, you know, someone had a crack in their screen,
right?
But it still worked. They can use the computer till the part comes in.
Right.
But another customer cracking a screen didn't work at all. They can't use their computer.
That's right. That's right. And yes, often the problem is minor, and it can be fixed in a day or two, but you won't know that until after you've taken it in. So take it in now.
Yeah.
Get that repair done immediately.
Well, most of the schools are ending within the next week or so, aren't they?
Right, right, right. The minute you can, take that machine in, get it looked at. If it takes a month and a half to get the parts, you better get it in now.
Well, that's why I think, you know, for a lot of the kids, you know, if the machine is, especially since right now you're probably doing exams and everything else on it. So if it is acting up, ask your kids to make a list that you know, they can hand over to you and say, yeah, I was trying to do this or I was trying to do that. So then when you take it into the repair shop, they've got a list of stuff that they can check, not just, oh, yeah, it's not working right.
Right.
It's a lot more helpful if they know what they're looking for and, you know, you can help them point them in the direction. It saves them time and new time as far as what you're paying for.
Right. Help them help you. All right. We're going to take a quick break, but we will be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. There's only 25 votes in the poll, so get on that, will you? Give us a call, 585-966-5299, 1-800-790-0415. We'll be back with more sound bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Don't go too far. We'll see you on the other side.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. You can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. The Apple Worldwide Developer Conference 2022, the WWDC. Is now over. Apple has showcased iOS 16, which is getting a revamped lock screen. Everybody's talking about the lock screen.
Which all the Android people have pointed out that Android has done for a couple years now.
A couple years now, yeah. But it's got, you know, it's never been done before. It's a new lock screen. It's got new features. It's got improved dictation. It's got updates for the Messages app. It also revealed watchOS 9, which comes with new activity features, improvements to workout, and ability to track medications as well. There was also macOS Ventura, which comes with better multitasking. The new iPadOS 16 also comes with improved multitasking thanks to the Stage Manager feature, which is also seen in macOS 13. Most importantly, Apple confirmed its M2 processor and two new laptops, the MacBook Air and the 13-inch MacBook Pro. The M2 is next-gen of Apple's silicon with a 5-nanometer design. The M2 chipset can handle a maximum of 24 gigabytes of unified memory. Is that all?
This is the low-end models.
Yeah, you're right. The 2022 MacBook Air will run the M2 chipset and come with a new design. Apple has also showcased the new MacBook Pro, 13 inches, with the new M2 processor. Apple iPadOS 16 will allow users to rely on virtual memory swap. This will let users rely on iPad storage as extra RAM for apps that need it. Stage Manager is also coming to the iPadOS 16. Apple is rolling out a lot of features for iPadOS 16, including the Stage Manager, customizable toolbars, the ability to change extensions in the file folder, navigation buttons and files apps, the weather app, the option to find and merge contacts, the ability to create lists and contacts, and undo redo options across the system. The new version of macOS is called macOS Ventura, not Jesse, I suppose. Maybe it is.
Ventura Boulevard, Ventura County.
Right. There's a new Stage Manager feature which lets users focus on the app they're using without distractions. All the other windows get pushed to the side when you turn on Stage Manager. The new Apple MacBook Air is here, and it comes, or it will be soon here, and comes with MagSafe charging. Yes, the display has a notch. This one has a 13.6-inch display with liquid retina display. The display sports 1 billion colors, which means this is a 10-bit display. Apple is also adding a 1080p camera to the MacBook Air, finally. The speakers and mics are integrated between the display and the keyboard. It has a 4-speaker sound system. Apple MacBook Air does come with spatial audio. Touch ID is still there. The M2 processor is now official. This is the next generation of Apple silicon with a 5-nanometer design, 25 billion transistors. That's billion with a B. It has a 10-core GPU, keeps the same 8-core CPU. M2 can handle 24 gigabytes of unified memory, like we said. A new MacBook Air and a 13-inch MacBook Pro have been announced, both powered by that M2 processor. So are you hot for new Apple hardware? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll-free 1-800-790-0415. A lot of incremental things. You know, I've already heard people say, well, that was disappointing. Well, you know what? It isn't every week you get an iPhone or an iPod, you know, a revolutionary product. Yes, it's Apple. Yes, you used to get revolutionary products every year. You don't get them every year anymore. It just isn't the way
they've
it works.
Run the gamut on it.
Yeah, it's hard to find new stuff.
And it's a little bit confusing. The MacBook Air lost its wedge. It used to be a wedge. Now it's flat.
Okay.
But it got the 14-inch case treatment. It now has little feet that lift it up for airflow underneath. And they added the MagSafe. So now you still have two ports. So before, there were two ports, and one of them was power. So you only had one free port when you wanted to charge it. Now you have power and two ports and a better camera. And in many respects, it's better than the MacBook Pro that costs the same price.
Yeah.
But the MacBook Pro is a little faster. So you want a little more speed, or do you want a little thinner computer? This is basically the difference between the Air and the Pro at the low end.
There's just not a lot of different things that they can do with the computers anymore. They've more or less hit the wall. Like I've said for a while now, you can go into most retail stores. You don't see the big boxes anymore. Yep. All you're seeing are usually laptops, Chromebooks, or tablets.
Right.
Yeah, that's it.
The big things, that, especially with the Apple M-Series chips, is the rendering engines that are on chip.
Right.
So if you're doing video editing, especially in Final Cut, it's just really, really fast. And average people having their own YouTube channels now is huge. You know, we have one. I don't put much editing into it, though, but we have one.
But you could now.
I could now, yeah. Well, my audio editing, I think I told this at the beginning, when I'm doing the podcast, it used to take about 5 minutes to export the final MP3 on my quad i7 Intel.
Right.
And now on my 14-inch M1, it takes 90 seconds.
Yep.
So screaming fast. The more interesting thing that I think came out that isn't getting as much press is passkeys.
That's true.
So Apple's part of the
fight. Something about that in there. Didn't
Apple's it? Part of yeah, it was a paragraph. So Apple's part of the FIDO Alliance, which I'm a little mad because FIDO's something else.
FIDO is something else.
But passkeys have come out, and I'm a little mad because it's Squirrel. It's the same concept Steve Gibson did with Squirrel. It's a replacement for passwords. It's public key crypto. So your computer generates a private key pair, and when you log into a website, your public key goes to the other end, and they can compare that with something encrypted and be verified that it's you. It's the same way website encryption works now, so we're used to this public.
And if you encrypt your email, that's how that works.
So it's something we're already used to. And the biggest thing is you don't have a password to remember or to write down or forget. It's stored in your device, and the other end has no secret to keep. So you hardly ever lose your passwords.
Right.
The other end gets breached and your password is lost. There's 12 billion breached accounts, according to Have I Been Pwned. So the other end loses your password. And because passwords are annoying, you use similar passwords on multiple websites. And so now the bad guys break into all your services. By not having any secrets to keep, the other end has less risk for you losing your stuff. And if you don't have an iPhone, so Apple's building it into the iPhone OS, and if you go to a non-Apple service, it uses a QR code, which is where Squirrel came in. You know, SQRL, it's the secure, quick, reliable login using QR codes in the same public key crypto. I'm trying to find out if it uses the same elliptic curve encryption.
But the only issue there, and I didn't read anything about how they're resolving it, is what happens if you lose this?
You have your other thing. So the problem becomes if you only have one device.
Right.
But in that case, your recovery information is stored on iCloud.
Okay.
So it makes remembering your iCloud password much more important, too.
Right.
Which it already is now. Here's another tip. Go into your iCloud account. Go into your Google account. Go into your Gmail, Yahoo account. Make sure your recovery email address is up to date. Make sure your recovery phone number is up to date.
Yes.
So many people have lost access to their Google account because the phone number was 3 phones ago.
Right. Or 5 email addresses.
5 email addresses ago, yeah. So that Apple is storing the stuff on their iCloud, Google is storing on their cloud, Microsoft on their cloud. And this is a cross-platform endeavor with the FIDO Alliance, so it's going to be coming to iOS and Android and Windows. And hopefully websites will start using it more to try to eliminate passwords and increase your security by not needing to keep a secret for you.
So if you lose or this dies,
mm-hmm.
you can
on another
your information on another device.
On another device because it's stored at Apple, yep.
Okay, good. That's important. All right, to the phones. Our next caller is Rich from Irondequoit, New York. What's up, Rich?
Hi, guys. There is an app on everybody's cell phone called Play Store where you can find an app for whatever interests you, right?
Right.
Is there such a Play Store on a laptop? Got a new laptop. It came with only 2 or 3 programs or apps, I might say.
Yep.
How does one fill up a screen on your new laptop to get all of the interests you want?
What operating system?
Well, Windows 10.
Then there's the Microsoft Store that does the same thing.
What is it called? Those two words?
The Microsoft Store, yep. Or Windows Store, maybe. Well, it's probably Microsoft Store because they sell more than Windows now.
Right. I think it's called the Microsoft Store, and the icon is a shopping bag.
And it's in your...
on your taskbar.
Your taskbar. One of the things that the stores do is that they do list programs for you to download, but they don't list everything. There's a lot of companies that still only distribute software on their own store, and that becomes a discovery issue. So someone tells you about a cool program that you can buy from this other store. It used to be we had physical stores you walk into and shelves and shelves and shelves of software.
I remember those halcyon days of yours.
But a lot of the times, though, you can just use Google to search for a particular program that you're looking for and download it directly from them.
As now, long as you're aware you're getting it from a real place.
Yeah. But a word of caution. When you do get these packages, just like we were talking in the last hour, when you download them and go to install them, take the time to read what you're installing, because quite often they bundle in other packages that you could inadvertently click on and all of a sudden sign up for those too. So be cautious. If they do bundle other software with it, and they'll even do that on the Microsoft Store because that's how they earn extra money, you can, all right, when it goes through, quite often they'll say, hey, do you want this product? And there is a decline button, usually over in the lower left-hand corner, that you can say decline. And it will continue on installing, and it'll try to go to the next product. And again, till you get to the one that you want, be cautious.
Thank you. One of you guys said there's a little shopping bag on the taskbar. I've not seen that.
A white task.
Enter Microsoft Store at the top, and it'll take me somewhere, but I will be cautious.
There is a it's the Microsoft Store. It might be called the Windows Store on some machines, but it's the Microsoft Store. There's usually a white shopping bag with the Windows 4 color logo in the middle of it. If that's not on your taskbar, it should be in the start menu.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
And ironically,
and if not, you can always type in the search bar, Microsoft Store.
Got it. Yep. Got it. Very good.
Ironically, in the top free apps on the Windows Store, number one is iTunes.
Yeah.
Number two is Netflix. Number three is Xbox. Number four is iCloud.
Interesting.
So there's a lot of Apple, probably iPhone users that are also using Windows. And you need the Apple software, too.
Wonderful. Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Have a good weekend. Thank
you. You too. And the interesting thing about that Play Store, if you have Windows S, and we all know what the S stands for, but if you have Windows S, that's the only place you can really get software. They tend to block other ways of installing software.
The biggest advantage, especially to less experienced users, is that the apps in the App Store are all vetted before they are put up there. So they're not malicious yet.
Yes.
Although one of the tricks is a developer uploads a program that's fine, gets approved, and then they release an update that has all the bad stuff in it.
Right. But you can find lots and lots of software through there, and it is really, for most users, it's probably the first place you should be looking.
Yeah.
To install software, because then it's super easy to install. You just click on it. And again, as Dave said, you know, be very careful. Read every prompt, but you can generally install just the software you're asking for. And it's a good
A lot of folks think that they got to install all this other stuff that's bundled with it. No, you don't have to. You can decline that one. They're just offers. They are just offers that are attached to the original package.
And many things in the Windows Store are free, so, you know, you win that way.
Another thing to be careful about is subscription programs.
Yeah.
Some of them are, say, you know, 99 cents a month or $9.99 a month. Be really careful about that period, time.
Yeah.
There was a couple of apps that got caught recently that were $19.99 a week.
Wow, we're in the wrong business. And we are in the wrong business.
People started complaining, and the answer from the developer was, it said what it was, you clicked agree, okay, give us our money.
Yeah, yeah. You know, we all, the fact is, if you click on a link, and that link says pay me, and you say okay, you really don't have much of a leg to stand on when you want your money back. If something pops up on your screen and says pay me and you say okay, you still don't have much of a leg, but you got more leg than in the first instance.
Mm-hmm.
But if you go to a website specifically, say, install this, and it says pay me, and you say yes, pay them.
Yeah.
There's, I mean, what, you know.
Cancel any future payments if you want to cancel the subscription.
But, right.
It's caveat emptor, let the buyer beware. Read what it says. If it says $99 a week, that's where, what you've agreed to pay.
Again, just like working on the machine. When you go to install stuff, slow down.
Pay attention.
Take your time. And, yeah, I know you don't have to read all the legal verbiage, but kind of get the gist, you know, that you're accepting it, especially if there's buttons there that you can decline. Go ahead and click on the decline so it stops the install. It probably, you know, could be malicious software anyways.
Right.
Another thing Apple introduced to be built into the Apple OS's is Apple Pay Later, which is similar to things from Affirm and PayPal, where it's basically 0% financing.
Right.
So you buy something for $500, and it splits it into four payments over 6 weeks. Apple eats the interest. So they, nice. They don't charge you any interest. They're paying the company full price, and they're not collecting any interest from you.
That's nice.
That's nice.
Yeah.
But we're confused. Why are they doing it?
Yeah. You pay them on Monday. They pay the other company on Wednesday. They've got, you know, over a million people. They've got millions of dollars in flow.
Yep. Yeah.
And so other companies
losing money.
Yeah. Other companies like Affirm have said, welcome, Apple. You can thank us for generating this business model for you.
Right.
Exactly. Well, it's a use of free money.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, banks do that all the time.
OPM, baby. Other people's money.
Mm-hmm. I bought a couple of my airplanes on Affirm.
Yeah. All right. So I should read this because this is something that is going to have an impact on most of our listeners at some point in their lives. The European Union, the EU.
Ew.
Has officially decided to adopt a universal mobile phone charging cable for all new smartphones, and that cable is going to be USB-C. This means Apple will have to make the switch from their own Lightning port to USB-C if they want to sell iPhones in Europe. Hint, they do. Most other phone manufacturers currently use it. Not only will smartphones be included in the bill, but so will all portable electronic devices, including tablets, cameras, and handheld consoles. However, the UK is not considering making the same decision at this time, according to the BBC. Because the UK, Brexit. We've got to do something different. While many may rejoice at the convergence of charging cables, Apple is likely not so pleased. The company has long been fighting the adoption of a universal cable that isn't theirs, believing companies should focus on the plug that goes into the wall instead of the connector to the phone. EU regulators say the time has come, though, and it is phone companies' own fault for not coming up with their own solution. European customers were frustrated long enough about incompatible chargers piling up in their drawers, so to speak. Margaret Vestager, who's the executive vice president for the European Commission's European Fit for the Digital Age strategy, said in a statement, we gave industry plenty of time to come up with their own solutions. Now time is ripe for legislative action for a common charger. This is an important win for our consumers and environment and in line with our green and digital ambitions. This move is set to reduce wastage from having multiple unused chargers, as well as improve the landscape for consumers. So how do you feel about having one common charger? We don't have time for you to give us a call because it's coming up on the end of the show.
The previous standard the EU set was micro USB.
Right.
And Apple solved that by including a lightning to micro USB adapter in their box.
They may do the same thing here.
They may do the same thing now. We have been expecting Apple to switch to USB-C. All of their iPads are USB-C now except one. And we were a little surprised that the iPhone 13 this year didn't have USB-C, or last year, so maybe iPhone 14 this year. The story goes that Apple wanted to use USB-C, but it wasn't ready yet. So they developed...
15 years ago!
They developed Lightning in 2012. USB-C didn't come out until 2014. So for 2 years... So the Apple was switching away from the 30-pin dock connector. USB-C wasn't ready yet, so they came out with a Lightning that had a lot of the advantages that USB-C was going to have. The biggest one is reversibility.
Right. Yeah.
You plug it in the first way, it doesn't work. You turn it around, plug it in the second way, it doesn't work. You turn it around, plug it in the third way, and it works.
Works every time.
Yeah.
50% of the time.
50% of the time, yeah. So it's been 10 years we've had the Lightning port. And there was such a huge outcry when Apple switched from 30-pin to Lightning. And same thing now started happening in the iPad world when they switched from a Lightning to USB-C. And in fact, that the high-end iPad Pros have a Thunderbolt part on it. That's one of the concerns that some people have is that there are better standards than USB. Why is the EU
that hollow thunk was Dave's head?
His head, yeah. So why is the EU saying USB-C? Why couldn't it be Thunderbolt?
Right.
And when the next better thing
because 90% of the world uses USB-C right. already.
When the next better thing comes out, it won't be legal to use in Europe.
Right.
Until they change the law there.
Right.
So it's going to be rough. But USB-C. The worry we have in the Apple world is that they're going to remove the port completely. And have just wireless charging.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So how does the EU handle that if there is no charging port at all?
I don't think it cares. It's only if there's a charging port. USB-C.
It has to be USB-C.
And there are a lot of devices that have wireless charging. We have one that we give away as a prize. Yep. Prize. What do you call it?
Gift.
Gift for pledging.
For pledging. And with our logo on it, with the Soundbites logo on it. It's very cool. But if you have a wireless phone, a wireless charging phone, or I suppose any other device, you know, iPad, whatever, you can use that. But the thing is, and they're coming in cars now, and you can buy a sofa that's got one built into the arm and rest of the sofa.
So as soon as cars finally start having USB-C on them, we're moving to wireless.
Moving to wireless. But not everybody will do that. The reality is that right now I've got at least four separate cables at home for various things. And plugging the USB-C and the micro USB and the mini USB and the old original Apple connector and all that other nonsense. Pain in the neck finding the right cable.
It's an SKCD cartoon about 14 competing standards. We should unify them and make one good standard. Now there's 15 competing standards.
Exactly. but if everything went to USB-C, I've got currently I was working with a friend of mine and helping several people get their computers up to date on various things. All but one of them used USB-C. So I could just put the laptop on the table, plug in a connector, go, plug in a connector, plug in a connector. Then the last person brought their computer over, did not bring the power cord. I can't help you.
Yeah.
Well, even we run into this in the store all the time. Even two different models of Dell have different power cords.
Yeah, and then the customer will say, well, don't you have one? You're a repair shop. I'd sit there and tell them, how many different manufacturers, and within that manufacturer, how many different configurations they've got.
Remember the olden days when you go to Radio Shack and buy the universal converter with 100 tips on it?
Yes.
100 tips and 7 voltages.
I've still got one and I've lost all the tips. So that's a problem. All right. That music tells us we are done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. I absolutely want to thank all of you who called in and all of you who voted in the poll. Please vote in the poll. It makes me happy to see the numbers go up. And of course, please, if you've got more to say about this subject, please go to our website at soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you and say something in the forums. But we are done for another week. We will be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest running computer show in the known universe. That would be Soundbites right here on the Truly Great, and truly grateful to you that with your generous support, we continue to be member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you in just 166 hours.